Welcome to the Portage County Safety Council Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's safety chat.
Hi, this is Nick Coya with the Ohio Bureau of Workers' Compensation and Portage County Safety Council. Today we are joined by Eric White from the BWC. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Nick.
Thanks for coming today. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, what you do at the Bureau, and some of your experiences related to trenching?
Well, like you said, I'm a safety consultant for the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, specifically the Division of Safety and Hygiene. I've been with the state now, this is my 18th year, and things I do primarily is go out and work with employers on safety-related items, specifically today, construction, dealing with trenching.
And today for our listeners, we're going to have a conversation about trenching and look at some of the issues that we see there. So Eric, when you're out in the field at these construction sites, what are some of the top three issues you would say you see happen at construction sites related to trenches?
Well, I'd say number one would be lack of cave-in protection for the individual employees down in the trench. That'd be number one. They're not providing proper cave-in protection, whether it's sloping, benching, shoring, or shields. Lack of egress. They're not using any ladders. Or when they're using the shields, which is probably the largest thing that I see, the most common thing I see contractors using are the shields. They're not installing them properly.
So what would affect a decision to implement a cave-in protection? At what point do I need that? And then are there any variables to that?
Well, if we look at it just from a compliance standpoint, OSHA requires that we provide cave-in protection at a depth of 5 feet. So you have to plan for it. You have to plan, how deep am I going? And we know planning, you can always plan as best as you can, but sometimes things don't go according to your plan. So at 5 feet, I need cave-in protection, but I may also need it at 4 feet. And that 4 foot depth may be required because of bad soil, water, could be excessive vibration, it could be underground utilities. So there's a variety of reasons where I still may want to provide cave-in protection at that depth of less than 5 feet. But that's up to that competent person that's required to be on that job site to determine that.
You know, recently I was at a job site and they were laying some waterline pipes. And so they were dug down about 3 foot, 3.5 foot down. But my concern was the employee working there was doing pipe connections down on his knees. And they were running an excavator down the road next to them, and it had just rained all night.
Right, yeah, and that's one example I give many times in my training is the hole may only be 4 or 3 feet deep, but if I'm down there on my hands and knees or I'm laying on my belly or whatever the case might be, I still have that 3 foot of dirt or 4 foot of dirt above me that in the event of a cave-in, it's going to be just as bad as if I'm standing in a 7 foot hole.
So if we are going to install these shields, what are some of the proper ways that we should have shields installed? What problems are you seeing out in the field?
Well, we always want to refer to the tabulated data. So if we're just talking specifically trench boxes, which is the most common thing that most contractors are using for cave-in protection, we want to always refer to the manufacturer, and we typically call that the tabulated data. And that's basically the guidebook or the instruction manual on how to install that trench box. And that's all going to be dictated by soil types. So we, you know, if we just talk soil types, we've got solid rock, which generally we're not going to be doing because if you're digging in solid rock, that means you're blasting. So, and don't think shale is solid rock. A lot of times people will tell me it's solid rock. No, shale is not solid rock. So we're not blasting. So then we got A, B, and C type soils. So our competent person needs to determine, is my soil an A? Is it a B? Is it a C? Or maybe it's a combination because we got layered soils. So we got to first determine what that soil type is. And then once we determine that soil type, refer to the tabulated data. And then that tabulated data will tell me that trench box, I can put it X feet deep in a type A soil. Or if it's a C soil, I may only be able to go half that depth. So it's just going to vary depending on the make and the model of the trench box.
Once that box is in, do we need to backfill to that? And should we see any of that box standing above the trench level? How does that piece work?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, trench boxes, they don't prevent a cave-in. So unlike sloping or benching or shoring, those devices, or if we're going to use those types of protection, those actually will prevent a cave-in if done properly, whereas a shield or a trench box does not prevent a cave-in. So that's why it's that much more important that we follow that tabulated data and make sure that we put that trench box in the hole correctly because it's not going to prevent a cave-in. So yeah, we want to backfill. So if the hole has been overdug for whatever reason because of sandy soil or what have you, we want to make sure that we're backfilling that trench box. And then yeah, we want to make sure that trench box is at a minimum at the height of the top of the trench.
So here's the hard question that everybody likes to ask. If I have this shield or this box in place and then I need to drag it to the next spot, can I keep my workers in there while we drag it, or do we have to bring them out of the hole first?
Well, yeah, that's always a question that we get a lot of times. And You know, that's pretty much how contractors do that work. It's very common, and it's a known practice that contractors will take the excavator and then slide that trench box to the next spot. And then, of course, the workers will stay in there. And OSHA's kind of silent. They are silent on it. They state in the standard that you're not allowed to be in the trench while boxes are being installed or removed. And of course, when being moved vertically, but they don't say anything about horizontally. So to answer your question, can you do it? I say yes. In my opinion, having that employee climb out of that trench box every time you move it is probably more of a hazard than staying in it. So as long as that an employee can stay within the walls of the trench box while the excavator is sliding the box itself, I'm perfectly fine with that.
So how about the employees who are topside? Do we need to put up any type of barriers for traffic or pedestrians that may be in the area when we're doing this trenching work?
Yeah, obviously, you know, if you're working around the public with vehicle traffic or pedestrian traffic, yeah, you want to have warning signs, you want to have barricades to keep those folks away from entering into your trench, falling into it, driving into it. So whether it's barricades for cars, obviously, you want to make sure all your workers are wearing their vests so that they can be seen. But yeah, we want to make sure that we protect that so that folks cannot mistakenly come into our trench. And then more importantly, what do we do afterwards overnight? You know, sometimes we come across or as a contractor, you may have to leave that hole open for whatever reason. So obviously the best thing we want to do is to put plate, steel plate over top of that hole if we cannot backfill it. But if that's not possible, you want to make sure you're doing your due diligence. You don't want to use caution tape. Caution tape is not going to prevent somebody from falling into your hole. You don't want to take the arm of the excavator and put it over the hole. I see that all the time when I drive around at night or on the weekends. So yeah, you definitely want to make sure that you're protecting that hole. Steel plate would be the best while construction is not being done, but during construction, yeah, barricades, anything you can do to warn the public.
So these boxes or shields that we're utilizing, do they need to have any type of inspection done on them on a regular basis, or can we just continue to throw them in there and beat them up?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You want to make sure you're doing your inspections and go back to the manufacturer on those inspections because they do get beat up. You know, when you're dragging them, putting them in out of holes, traveling them back and forth to job site, they will get roughed up pretty good. But yeah, you definitely want to make sure you're doing your inspections so that obviously as we use them in the event of a cave-in, they're going to work.
Okay, a little bit ago, you just talked about soil classes. Can you give us a little better definition of class A, B, and C soils so that our general public may have a better understanding of that?
Yeah, so if we're trying to determine our soils, we know they're, you know, oil, we classify them as A, B, and C. A's are your strongest soils. C's are your weakest. So if we just look at what is an A soil, many times those A soils will have a lot of clay in them. So they're what we call cohesive soils. B soils will be cohesive as well, but they're kind of going to have some clay. They might have some loam in them. And then your C soils are going to be your weakest. They're going to be your sandy soils. They're going to be your sandals. Pretty much sand and aggregate are your C soils. So if we look at your A soils, they're the strongest. They're able to withstand 1.5 tons per square foot of pressure or greater. Your B soils are going to be able to withstand between 0.5 and 1.5 tons per square foot. And then your C soils are going to be less than 0.5 tons per square foot. So how do you determine that? Well, that's usually the problem is we don't train our workers to be able to determine or train our competent person to be able to identify soil types. OSHA says we have to do at least one visual and one manual test to determine those soil types. So we want to be able to train our workers on what are those manual tests that we can do, what are those visual tests we can do, or worst case scenario, the OSHA will allow us to use worst case scenario when it comes to soil classifications, which basically means that you're going to assume that all your soils are C soils, which then means you have to protect them to the C. If you're using trench boxes, you have to make sure you're installing that trench box according to the tabulated data at a C soil. Or if you're going to slope it, you have to slope it to a C soil, which is a pretty big opening, which is a 1.5:1 slope. So we generally don't see the sloping because we don't have that much room when we're doing trenching work typically because we're along sidewalks or roads or other barriers.
So when we talk about soil classes, if the soil has been previously disturbed, does that play into the soil classification at all?
Yeah, right. So there's a lot of things that will go into what determines an A, B, and C soil. So one of those being, is it previously disturbed? So if you are doing a pipe replacement or a utility replacement, you obviously know that it's been previously disturbed. So if you determine through your manual and visual test that it is a B soil, but then it's also been previously disturbed, it goes down by one. So it would be a C soil. And water will dictate that too. So if you know you have lots and lots of standing water in your trench, that will automatically make it a C soil.
So for a lot of my municipalities that get call outs to replace water lines or sewer lines in the middle of the night in storms, we would most likely say those are going to be a C-type soil.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got a water main. Obviously, you're going to have water pouring into that trench. So ideally, we never want to work in a trench with standing water. We want to try to divert it or pump it out as much as possible. But we know the nature of the beast is if you're doing a water main replacement because it's broken in the middle of the night, you're going to be probably standing in a little bit of water, but you want to keep it as minimal as possible. And so obviously, in that scenario, we're going to be dealing with a C soil. So we're going to protect that to that level of C.
You know, I've seen this at some job sites too, where the operator of the excavator isn't taking time to move that soil pile very far. He's just dumping right at the top of the hole. Where should we be looking for that soil pile to be?
Well, as far back as possible, but a minimum of 2 feet. So the code is pretty specific saying those soil piles have to be 2 feet or greater back, but 2 feet is the minimum, but the farther the better, because the reason we want those back as far as possible is you don't want that extra load at the top of that trench, thus contributing maybe to a cave-in.
Last question I have for you on this, and you know, it becomes a complicated area for some people, it's a point of confusion. When we have trenches, are they considered a confined space or not?
Well, according to the code, if you look in the code from OSHA standpoint, they'll tell you trenches are exempt from the confined space standard. However, there is some verbiage in the code that says, you know, based on conditions that we still may want to take some action and do some air monitoring of our trench if we are digging in a known area where there could be buried hazardous chemicals or working on or near a landfill. We want to take those precautions as well. So are they a confined space? Not per code, but we still may want to take some safety considerations and do some air monitoring if needed.
All right, Eric, thank you so much for coming out today to talk to us about trenching and some of the aspects of safety. And once again, to our listeners, have a great day and be safe.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. To learn more about how your company can earn up to a 4% Ohio BWC premium rebate by becoming an active member of the Portage County Safety Council, please visit our website at www.portagecountysafetycouncil.wordpress.com. The preceding information is for entertainment purposes only. Views expressed may not reflect the views of any affiliated or sponsoring individuals or organizations. Listeners should carefully weigh information provided and seek advice from an appropriate professional before implementing. Listener discretion is advised.